discussing the ideas, the challenges, and the technology of the crypto economy. This is a Crypto Economy Chat. What is up, crew? Welcome back to the show. We got a chat today because I sat down and had a ton of fun with McFlugel and Slappy from the Rollo and Slappy show. If anybody saw that, if you haven't listened to it yet, well, here it is. We talked about everything with the Lightning Network and Bitcoin and what it was like holding the Lightning Torch. Spoiler alert, it was awesome. Shout out to Jesse Lawler for hitting me up and not letting it get passed on to anybody else before I got my hands on it. And we just talked about all kinds of stuff. And, you know, we're probably just going to jump right into this. I don't really have much of an introduction here. You probably are going to have to check out the Rollo and Slappy show. And a huge thank you to those guys as well. They are promoting the donations and thanking me for the human threat model and the Bitcoin threat model and the Szabo pieces on 10 hours of Bitcoin that were done with J.W. Weatherman. And in fact, I haven't even checked on that. Like last night, I looked and it was like $74 or something. So that's been really exciting, and I really appreciate all these guys have done. And it was a really fun discussion. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and jump into it. And there is a break. Well, there's a couple little things. One, they had a bit of a audio mismatch where Rollo was like, sounded like 6 or 7 seconds behind everybody. And it was really, really weird there for a second. And I edited a little bit of it out. But I'm going to leave one of the breaks in just so that we have an opportunity to talk about the sponsor of our show. But for now, let's go ahead and jump into the Rollo and Slappy show, where we talk all about the Lightning Network.
Hello and welcome to episode 131 of the Rollo and Slappy show. Today is February 11th, 2019. I am Rollo McFlugel, and with me is Slappy Jones 2, and we are both McFlugel.com. Show notes page for this episode will be McFlugel.com/131, where you'll be able to find links to the things we talk about, our sponsor, LibertyMugs.com, where you can go buy some awesome libertarian and Bitcoin-themed mugs and t-shirts, and also ways to check out our guest, who Slappy is going to introduce.
Hey, thanks, Rollo. Thanks, Evan, for listening. Today, we'll be talking Bitcoin and the Lightning Network with Guy Swan from Crypto Economy Podcast. Welcome to the show, Guy.
Well, thank you, guys. It is good to be here.
Yeah, so what's up with this? We'll get right into it. What's up with this Lightning Torch? You have it? You had it?
I had it. I held it for about 2 hours, and it was glorious.
And
did you hear like the Olympic music? Did you hear the Olympic music in the background and stuff?
Yes. It started playing out of my computer. I actually had to mute it because I was in the middle of stuff. No. So I actually was pretty late to the game on that one because I had a friend that I chat with in our Lightning liquidity pool who asked me about it. Sometime, and it had already been passed through like 90 people. But basically the concept is because the Lightning Network is getting to the point where like it's actually built out and people can transact and it's being used for a lot of things, an account, not is his name on Twitter, decided that he was going to start a thing. I think he started it with maybe 100,000 Satoshis or something. And he was just going to pass it to somebody random, and they would add 10,000 Satoshis to it and then pass it to somebody else. So everybody has just been passing this payment over and over and over from person to person, and like tons of major people in the, like, I think Pierre's held it. Jack, the CEO of Twitter, just held it recently. Elizabeth Stark had it. Charlie Lee. I mean, like, it's just been bouncing all over the place, and it's just been getting more and more exciting as it went to space. It's hit, like, I can't even remember the last, when you look at the, somebody made, oh, God, the guy posted it in our liquidity pool. Somebody made an awesome video. I'll grab that link so that y'all can share it. But it's a video of just tracing. It's just bouncing country, like, all over the world, this payment that's instant and doesn't cost. I mean, they're adding 10,000 Satoshis is, like, 30 cent. Like, and like, what other payment mechanism could you possibly do that? You could send it to Australia in an instant for 30 cent and the payment gets bigger. It doesn't, there's no 5% fee in right. 3 business days, you know? And it was just awesome. And I got to hold it the other day and I was not even, I literally wasn't even prepared. that same guy, because I had been jumping in on Twitter comments previously. When he first told me about it, I was all giddy. I was all over Twitter, just chasing that thing around for a little while. And then I just stepped away and wasn't thinking about it. And 2 days later, he messaged me. He had the torch. And he was like, "You want the torch?" And I was like, "Hell yeah, I want the torch." And so I jumped up there, and he sent it to me. And I actually, it had gone to, what was it? 3,190,000 Satoshis, which
it's
is
that high already?
In dollars, like, I think it was like $115 or something.
Wow.
It's that high.
Yeah.
And
adding 30 cents at a time.
It's passed through 107. I was number 174, according to the website. And I did not, I actually didn't have, I never planned to make a payment that big in Lightning. So I actually only had one channel that had that amount of capacity in it. Luckily, I was able to accept it through that one channel, which is kind of a stroke of luck, honestly, because all my channels are like 400,000 Satoshis or something. It's like, a million Satoshis, which is like $40, $36. And so the way it works right now, because there's no, you can't split up payments across channels and stuff yet. Like, whatever your channel size is, that's the biggest payment you can make or accept currently. Development will come that will change that, but right now that's your limitation. So I literally just barely had the capacity in one of my channels. And I actually had a bit of a freak out because I couldn't send the payment out because I had to add 10,000 Satoshis to it, and that was past my limit. So I had just barely made a channel big enough to accept it, and then I couldn't send it back out. So I had to scramble to open up a new channel.
So you just closed your channel and took the Bitcoin?
It was yalls.org. It was that website. And yes, I exit scammed immediately.
Well, that's kind of the neat thing that no
million
one
Satoshis richer.
Yeah, that's the neat thing about it too, is no one's done an exit with it.
That's not true. Somebody did. Well, one person did at like 112, but they actually said that they were just doing it as an experiment. They responded. They said it was a social experiment or whatever, because he said, "Well, it's an irreversible payment. I have the keys. It's mine. Nobody can take it from me." And so everybody thought he had exit scammed, but then just a little bit later, the person who had sent it to him said, "Well, it's not stopping here, so I'm going to keep it up." And he just paid the entire balance again to send it to somebody else. And then the other guy apparently came back a little bit later. It's like, "Oh no, like, I wasn't actually taking it. I was just joking." And he refunded payment. So it sort of got exit scammed. Everybody thought it got exit scammed. that's actually kind of cool. That's why they call it the Lightning Trust Chain. It's technically literally.
Yeah. Sorry. We're like not synced
what
up.
What do you do? I didn't do it.
Yeah. We're not synced up at all. So, I'm going to keep the recording going and I'll just edit this out.
All right, guys. So what would happen if, someone was to send you that torch, but you didn't have a channel open that was big enough? What would happen with that money?
Nothing, essentially. It would just stay right where it was. So how it works is basically every channel that it has to bridge across, it's like it's locked up in escrow between both the two people that have the channel open. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say I'm sending one from me to you and then to Rollo. And I have a channel with you, you have one with Rollo, and if the payment doesn't work between you two, then the route just fails and it says no route available. Whether it's based on capacity or maybe you just don't have a channel. But if the money actually sends, then it's locked with my public key. So you guys can't unlock it unless I give the key to Rollo. And then, so essentially the payment can't happen. Either goes all the way through or it doesn't happen at all. So nobody in the middle has any power to actually take it. They're just routing it for people.
So say you were trying to send money to Rollo. You didn't have a channel open with Rollo, but you did have one with me and I had one with Rollo, but Rollo and mine is only one Bitcoin and you're trying to send him two. So it would just say there's no available channel.
Yes. Yeah. Gotcha. It would just say payment failed.
So that money doesn't, it's not like it gets lost or it's floating around. And
no, the money can't leave your balance until there's a route available.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And that does happen a lot currently, particularly like we're in the bootstrapping phase, but also there's so many technologies, like so much development happening around making sure that when there isn't a specific or explicit route available, that there are backups or there are other ways around that so that those minor limitations don't constantly pop up, because it's a weakest link in the chain type thing. You know, like you might have five channels with one Bitcoin, but if one of them in the mix just has 0.1 is the max payment you can send. Mm-hmm. Or at least through that route, you might have another route. That's why, like multipath payments and splicing. I think Alex Bosworth is working on splicing. He talks about that every once in a while because he's doing that and submarine swaps. But splicing would be sending out a transaction on chain and combining it with like the opening or the closing of a channel, and then also adding money into a channel that already exists. So it's like a combination of I'm doing a regular Bitcoin transaction plus let me do a little bit of channel management all in one and save a whole lot on fees. And then multipath payments is where I have a channel with you, a channel with Rollo, a channel with y'all's, and everybody has a channel with Starbucks, and I need to send, everybody's got 0.1, mm-hmm. and I need to send 0.3. Well, why don't I just send 0.1 through each route? So rather than just sending it through a single route, let me break it up into three different routes and send it all as one payment. And that's going to be the major game changer. When it's going to start disappearing and people won't see that there are any channels happening, they'll begin to just see it work and not know that all this crazy stuff is happening on the back end. You know, much like your router uses five different protocols to figure out best routes across the country, and it's updating its routing table every 15 or 20 seconds and trying to figure out what the best route to Google is. If you ever do like a trace route on like your terminal window or whatnot, like you'll see you're going through like 16 servers to get to, you know, California, but all that's happening on the back end. You don't see it, you know, you just click on something and it goes.
Yeah. We don't know. We don't care. It just,
yeah. Happens. Yeah. Who cares? So it's exciting. I think it will get there. It's not there yet, but it's really fun to see it all happening, like kind of live. Like every week there's some new little piece of the puzzle and you realize that there's this picture being built, and it's just going to be amazing when it gets there. I'm super excited. I'm so happy I got the torch.
Well, yeah, it's pretty neat because not that long ago, people who were helping implement Lightning Network were saying like, man, don't put anything more than like $10 on your channel.
Yeah, that didn't last very long.
No.
They're warning everybody, and then the whole community was like hashtag reckless and putting thousands of dollars on it. It's like, this is alpha software, guys. You people are stupid.
Yeah, but at least, I mean, that's one thing about, I'll say, about what I really like about the Bitcoin community with the development is that they're very, very conservative and careful with the code so that, you know, nothing gets messed up. But you can, it's all risk on the individual if they're putting money on the Lightning Network up to there. So it doesn't, that kind of recklessness is fine and fun.
Yeah, it's so much fun to see. It's crazy to see a culture around money. It's such an interesting, like, social movement at the same time, because everybody gets so jacked about, I mean, I get so excited about this stuff. I get giddy. I have to like some cool, like, new Lightning thing comes out and I'm like, oh, we got to take a shot. We got to celebrate. And then I go download some stupid thing. That's why I have a half mind is that's probably why we were delayed so bad, is because I had a Zap wallet syncing. And I was resyncing an old Bitcoin node that I was testing out because Nick Bhatia was having some trouble connecting to me, and I wanted to troubleshoot what he was doing. I hadn't used the Zap wallet in a while.
Ah, gotcha. So the excitement, because speaking of this Lightning Torch and the excitement around this stuff, because I experience, and I think a lot of people experience some great excitement, and you even mentioned it with Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, got the Lightning Torch and then started tweeting a lot of pretty great stuff about Bitcoin, and then was on the Stefan Levera podcast. So you want to talk about that, like what kind of that means to Bitcoin and Lightning Network and the internet of money?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Jack kind of seems to be a Bitcoin maximalist almost. From those comments, he was like, people were asking him what he owns, and he's like, only Bitcoin. And he definitely, we just talked about that a little while ago. How he said in Stefan Levera's, the interview on Stefan's show, that integrating Lightning, I mean, he's been working with Elizabeth Stark, the head of Lightning Labs. That was announced back at the end of 2017. So that's been kind of hush hush ever since then. But with the Lightning Network, he said it's a question of when, not if. And he seems really passionate and serious about, you know, online payments and helping to build out this infrastructure and stuff. And that's a huge thing. Like this is, you know, Twitter and Square. Those are major, major players in the whole, like, you know, alternative finance space. I think that's going to be, I think that's going to be a pretty powerful thing as that rolls out. I mean, Square Cash is, as soon as the Cash App started allowing you to buy Bitcoin, I was immediately like, all my friends, like, if you're paying me back for a beer or a coffee or anything, you do it in Square right now. I had a friend as I bought concert tickets so that we could all meet up, and I got so excited because I was like, oh my God, you're all going to pay me with Cash App, and I'm going to buy Bitcoin immediately. I'm so excited. And it had dumped that day real hard, so I was like, buy the dip.
No, that is that. I mean, that is really exciting. And what was interesting in that podcast episode with Stefan Levera was how connected he seemed for a while with kind of the cypherpunk movement a little bit.
He
was kind of aware of it.
Yeah. That's really exciting to know that he was there in the culture before it even happened, you know?
And it makes sense for a guy like him. You'd think that, I mean, we lose sight of it. I mean, because Twitter's been around for a long time now, I guess.
Yeah.
But I would have to imagine guys that are really like in this technical stuff that, and then it blows up and he becomes, you know, kind of corporate and he gets criticism for how the website's going. You kind of lose sight of, man, this might have been just a dude that that was nerdy just like us and just got wildly successful. There's probably some of that good stuff still in the back of his mind that he's dying to get out.
Yeah, there's a book, the name Jack Dorsey doesn't come up in it, but it's so funny to think about like where they all started, because almost all of them, like anybody who makes like a big software company, like if it's one of those, it, one of the ones that inevitably gets started in a garage, or, you know, started in this some really small thing and kind of gets out of hand overnight. They almost invariably start out as hackers, you know. Like Exploding the Phone is a really fun book that I read not too long ago, and it's about hacking the AT&T phone networks. That if you, like, you know, have you ever heard of those the black boxes or whatever that you could hook up and they would send out, because the entire AT&T network was mechanical and it would work based on tones, like in
right.
down the lines. Mm-hmm. So people would make these boxes that that allowed them to hack their way through the network, and, like, you know, long distance phone calls that would go international or whatever. It was the BitTorrent of the day. Is I'm going to get a free phone call to Europe that would have cost me $200 because I'm just gonna tone my way through the network as if I'm a maintenance person, and I can call anybody I want. There's a story about a guy who used it to bounce a connection back and forth, like all the way across, like around the country, like multiple times, just to connect back to somebody in his own neighborhood, like call his friend. And when they finally connected, there was like this horrible, like over the whole line, they could barely hear each other. And he's like, I'm calling you over like 320,000 miles of line. But it was like Steve Jobs, like making those boxes. It was all these people, is so many of these names that you would recognize because they went right from hacking, you know, their phones at home to making a computer that, you know, changed the world and stuff. Steve Wozniak, like all those guys were in the book. And it was funny how many times I was reading of these names that I would recognize. It's like, damn, I know that guy. But it was, that was a really cool book. And it kind of was an introduction to the whole cypherpunk culture. And it leads into that and the cypherpunk movement towards the end.
Yeah, it's really exciting with the, cause, and you mentioned this earlier too, with micropayments getting sent. I mean, you can send what? I think people have sent a single Satoshi on Lightning Network.
Mm-hmm. You can actually send Crypto Graffiti had a auction not too long ago for a swan that he made, a tiny, tiny little swan made out of cut up dollar bills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did see that.
You saw that? Yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah. And he sent it to the lowest bidder. There was an auction to see how small of a payment you could get on Lightning. And I think it won on a hundredth of a Satoshi, because you can send sub-Satoshi payments that are probabilistic. So you send a payment 100 times, and one out of 100 times you send a Satoshi. But because of that, you can send thousands and thousands of payments, and it evens out. It's kind of like the block time. Like, it's not exactly 10 minutes, but if you stretch it out over 1,000 blocks, it's basically 10 minutes. And that's how you do like probabilistic payments on the Lightning Network, and somebody got it for like a hundredth of a Satoshi.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's so it's programmatic money. Like, it's truly limitless. It's like saying, you know, it's like the internet.
Well, that's what's insane about it, is that now we have the ability to send these micropayments for very, very, very little cost. And at this point, for all intents and purposes, there's no cost, basically. Mm-hmm. And then, so when you integrate that with something like Twitter, you know, now all of a sudden you've got a lot of possibilities, a lot of things you can do with that. Because remember, the original cypherpunks who were trying to come up with digital cash, one of the main goals of it was for email. Was, you know, you want to send a little bit of money with your email.
With your email account, yeah.
Right, so you disincentivize people sending spam because you've got
This tiny cost attached to it.
Yeah. So this kind of goes off on a tangent a little bit. But speaking of that, because that little bit of cost that's associated with it, you know, really drops the noise down in your in your network. Did you hear about Bitcoin SV the other day?
I have not kept up with it.
Oh, no, yeah.
I've
well,
really watched it.
It's not something I keep up with it, but I saw it came up. So they're, you know, they're trying to do the cheap payment.
Terabyte blocks.
Right. You know, and putting data on their blockchain, more than just money, and then have it be super cheap. Well, this is a case study of why you want some cost associated with it, and also that you don't want the ability for anyone to put anything, because not long after they made the ability to do this, to put information on it, other than transactions, someone put child pornography on it.
I was thinking somebody printed all of Wikipedia to it.
So
it's child pornography, just that's not surprising either.
Yeah, so it's like, congratulations, it's failed. Because that is like, now everyone that runs a full node has child pornography downloaded. And it's like, that's a big problem. Yeah. And so that one little thing.
What are you
going
to do, roll it back?
Right. That destroys the purpose of being immutable. And then on top of that, it's just that one, all someone has to do is send one little image, and like it's just destroyed the functionality of it. So it's a very simple attack to do.
Yeah, and more importantly, is it just completely misses the point of what makes it useful. It's an ownership platform. You know, it's to secure signatures and ownership. Anything outside of that is a waste of space, because like, why would you need to store it indefinitely? If inevitably you want to clean out your hard drive, right? You know, like, and it just makes no sense to dump this I have stuff on my hard drive that I don't want to keep forever. Can you imagine if we were all running nodes and sharing this thing, and I had 1,000 other people storing my crap for me? It just, and all while sacrificing or putting in peril the value of store of having the ownership secured. You know, you're putting higher resource costs to keep an extra image, to a whole megabyte file, when all you need is the key. All you need is the key, and you can unlock and store anything elsewhere. But if you have the key in a public ledger, you have ownership to anything that you can attach it to elsewhere on the internet, completely secured, immutable, and uncensorable. That's what makes it powerful. Get that to as small a data as possible so that it lasts forever. You know, like, ownership is what's important about this thing.
Yep.
So I don't know. It just, that whole thing is backwards.
Oh, yeah. But the point, I went off on a tangent there, but the point I wanted to make, or the question, or the you know, whatever, the talking point to raise, was that if we're integrating micropayments on Twitter, whether it's to, you know, you got to pay a little fee to reply to someone or make a tweet or review, I mean, that could eliminate a lot of trolling and just raise the value of the content, like, tremendously. And there's so many ways to implement that.
Yeah, there was a brilliant idea. I think Alex Bosworth tweeted this out, actually, what did they call it? It's like, I think it was HODL HTLCs. I think that's the name they came up with. But it's essentially an escrowed Lightning payment that, like, sat in limbo for a little bit and allowed you to refund it immediately by just releasing the route back to the owner. And he was talking about an application. He says, imagine a CAPTCHA, rather than having to fill out, like, select all the stoplights. Like, instead of having to go through the stupid CAPTCHAs, how about you send 25 cent to the website and have it sit on a HODL HTLC, just sit in limbo. And then when you leave the website, if you weren't a spammer and you just browse the website like normal, it just jumps right back to you. So you never actually pay to go. Like, it's still free to just go and check out the website as long as you're not spamming it. So based on your activity, you just get the payment back. It's like it's like that grocery store. You pay 25 cents to get a grocery cart, and then you put the grocery cart back and you get 25 cents back. I was like, oh, that's brilliant. That would absolutely solve the spam problem. You wouldn't even need Cloudflare, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I was thinking you apply the exact same thing to Twitter. I mean, think about the spam bots and the fake accounts on Twitter that suddenly, like, you know, somebody's spinning up thousands of these things. That's expensive. But you do that for every individual account, and it's meaningless, you know? Like, on an individual scale, like, those types of micropayments are nothing. But when you're spamming, when you're creating 10,000 fake accounts to create a political agenda that's not there, that's expensive. It would completely eliminate that. And there's probably a whole division at Twitter trying to manage that, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Another one I heard, I think this was Jack and Elizabeth Stark and Stefan Lovera were talking about on that podcast, was about with advertising and privacy, is that this could help solve the internet privacy issue. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times to get, relevant traffic to you, so you can, or for someone to pay for their website or to make money off it, they have ads up there, and the ads use cookies and everything, and it takes your information. And, you know, it's gotten to the point now where people aren't exactly comfortable with all this information being farmed off you. But if you just have kind of a lightning network kind of thing in your browser, and you go on a website, and it's just, all right, you know, it's going to cost this much, this little small micropayment, for that small fee to keep your privacy, it sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, when it gets to the point of streaming money, Andreas Antonopoulos has a couple of videos about this, and he does such a good job of kind of laying out, like, the concept of streaming money. But, like, when it gets to that point, it will just be kind of, I imagine it will be more of a standard of, you know, you go to a website and it's just kind of this amount per time, but it's so small that unless you're actually using it extensively, you know, you're not even seeing payments. And you're doing it to completely secure, you know, your privacy and, like, your identity and your information. And you are, excuse me.
All right, so while I am clearing my throat behind the muted microphone, let's take a second and talk about our sponsor for the show.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
What was I saying? Streaming money. but it would, because we're running into a problem where ads are no longer, like, we're getting to a point where ads aren't funding the internet and we're having the surveillance problem, you know? And everybody's expecting this thing to be free, expecting it to be seamless and borderless. They actually talked about in that same interview, she actually mentioned it. Elizabeth Stark did the Minimizing Consumer Worry by Nick Szabo. And I read that one on my show. You can actually get that one on the Cryptoeconomy podcast. I guess it's about 40 minutes, I assume. But it's a really good piece where he talks about, like, the barriers for the consumer, and, like, the kind of mental barriers for making micropayments, and why micropayments never really became what we kind of imagined they would be at the birth of the internet. And I think when the Lightning Network gets to that point and it's just kind of all in the background, it's just going to completely change the dynamic of what's possible. Because payments will be completely hidden and completely frictionless, and it'll happen on this, like, microsecond, micro penny scale, and you can actually fund giant things through the, you know, the collective of 10,000 people going to your website, 100,000 people going to your website. I don't know. It'll be so exciting to see what people build with it. We got a long way to go, but I think it's actually possible this time around.
Yeah, and so one of the criticisms of the Lightning Network is that in order to use it, you need to have a full node running, mm-hmm. and you need to be online for it, and so you need to download the whole blockchain. But are you familiar with, was it Electrum that allows you to use Lightning by pruning your node? So
are you meaning Neutrino?
Neutrino, yeah. Electrum's just a wallet.
Yeah. Neutrino is a really fascinating concept. And I think there will be multiple different things that kind of move in this direction. But Neutrino is essentially, rather than, it's like a proof. It's like a mathematical proof for information that's in a block. So rather than having to download the full block, you download like this, I think it's like 128 kilobit header or something. And what's happening, like right now when you're talking to the network, you're requesting tons of data and sending out a lot of work for nodes. If you're a light client, you're basically giving up all of your privacy. You're saying, you know, I have these addresses and I am curious about these balances and any transactions that are related to these addresses. And you're pushing all of that out to some other computer, some other node running on the network. And you're asking them to find all this data and send it back to you, which is, you know, basically telling somebody else exactly what you have and what you're interested in, right? And Neutrino is essentially the reverse of that. It takes a whole lot of work off the nodes. They make basically what is this little filter for every single block, and it's completely standard. Every light client gets the exact same little filter, and it's a tiny, tiny fraction of the amount of data. So like, whereas the whole blockchain might be 220, 30 gigs, whatever it is right now, this would be like 20 megs. So you could download the entire blockchain's worth of filters. And what you can do with those filters is you can check against the blocks, against these little filters, and know with like a 95% certainty which blocks have transactions related to you in them. And then you can request just those blocks. But the key is that you're requesting the full block, which has, you know, what, 2,000, 3,000 transactions in it typically. So you're not giving anything to the network that says exactly what your addresses are. You get this huge amount of privacy back because you're not requesting any specific data. It's like instead of going to Google Maps and typing in your exact address, you type in your city, and then you just find your address in the data that you download. So Google doesn't know. They just know that you're looking for something relative to this entire city, but you could be one of, you know, thousands of other options or thousands of addresses. So it adds a huge layer of privacy, and at the same time, it makes light clients incredibly fast because you're talking about downloading 21 megs of data, which is a regular thing for, you know, mobile wallets or just mobile apps in general. It's you know, nothing in the terms of data use that we do these days. And then, you know, you download the four blocks that are related with your transactions and stuff, and you've gained back your privacy, and you know that nowhere else in the blockchain is there a payment that spends your Bitcoin. So you've got the security of knowing that you found all the blocks that have any transactions related to your channels to secure, you know, your balances, and you didn't have to tell anybody about what coins you have.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense because I thought they were doing it by pruning, because I was wondering how that could work.
Yeah, it's
especially with downloading the entire blockchain initially. Like, man, that would take forever, though. But yeah, if you're just yeah, doing this, no, that's really awesome then.
And I think kind of the idea now is to have, even if you are running like a full node, like let's say you have a Casa or a Zap wallet and you actually want to sync with the full blockchain, the idea is start it up and download all of these filters with Neutrino and get the wallet running immediately. Because there is still a degree of trust. You're still asking a node for the blocks, you know.
Right, right.
It's a whole giant leap forward from like just a normal light client, but still, you know, you are downloading the whole blockchain. You can use Neutrino to basically set up your light client like incredibly fast, and your wallet just starts working and you don't know that it's downloading the full blockchain later. So even the full wallets get the speed and reliability of a light client because they work basically out the gate. So it's going to add another layer of speed to it, and it's going to help the user experience a lot, because right now there's a ton of syncing and waiting and activating and status updates. There's a lot of headache right now. It's exciting when you're a nerd like me and you're watching all this stuff change and you're like, oh my god, only 100,000 blocks to go. You're not a nerd and you don't like it. It's annoying.
No, but I mean, it makes sense. I mean, right off the bat, it might seem like, hey, we're not having that so much security there, or as much security as a full node. But I mean, it's like when you currently right now outside of the Bitcoin world, you don't bring all of your money with you when you go out. You have your wallet and you got, you know, however much cash on hand that you feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And so it could kind of be the same kind of thing, whereas you maybe you have a vault in your house, or maybe you keep your other money stored in the bank or somewhere else, that, you know, there would be more secure ways of holding and keeping your Bitcoin. But when you just, you know, need to take a little bit out to do whatever you're going to do with it, it's a great option to have. That's quick and easy. And I think most people would be okay with slightly less secure to keep $100 worth of Bitcoin that's quickly available.
Yeah, it makes the hot wallet, cool wallet, cold wallet thing very applicable to kind of the layers that are going on there, which is exciting because it means like even your hot wallet is something that really you still store all your keys for. Mm-hmm. So even the least secure is, you know, tenfold more secure than anything you've got with like a bank or a financial service somewhere else. I mean, when was the last time you audited your bank, really?
Yeah. There's so much we take for granted with the current financial industries and everything that it's mind blowing when you take a step back and think about how much trust we have.
Yeah, it's kind of when you really look at like a comparison, it's just like there's no comparison at all. It's like being blindfolded the whole time, like you're just hoping. It's kind of staggering that it doesn't just fall apart. But I think it's a mix of there's a whole bunch of mess there, and that's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is. It doesn't fall apart, but there's a price to pay for that, and that's losing the value of your money through inflation.
Yeah, losing the value through inflation and losing every ounce or sense of privacy that you ever thought you had with it.
Right.
And that'll be, God, that's, as this thing really comes to fruition, I really hope to see, privacy is one of my biggest concerns with all this. And I think Lightning Network is a huge step in the right direction. And stuff like Neutrino, like as these things start getting rolled out, I think, I was hopeless for a while there. I really worried that, you know, privacy was going to just be a thing of the past. But some of the developments in the last 4 or 5 years in Bitcoin that have slowly been happening, and then Lightning Network and all this stuff was like, you know, Bitcoin itself was really, when I first found it, I was like, okay, like this could be a game changer. But it really did seem like the internet was just going to be this age of like free information, but privacy is just gone.
Yep.
Like it's just
everything you do is tracked. Everyone knows everything about you. Yeah.
It's kind of scary when you, the more you actually know about it, like the more you really know, there's a funny joke that like passed around on Twitter of the technology enthusiast has a Google Home and a smart thermostat and Amazon Echo in their kitchen and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the computer security expert who actually knows what all that means, the newest device they have is a printer from 1984, and they keep a gun next to it in case it makes any unexpected noises.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true.
I would love to have an Amazon Echo, but I can't bring myself to do it.
I don't own one.
Yeah, I don't have one either. Either.
Yeah. So tell me, how'd you get into the Bitcoin space? How long have you been involved?
Oh man.
And what brought you in? Do you remember? Has it been? Were you like one of the original? You know,
it was a long time ago. It was I don't think it was 2010. I think it was 2011. I think it was kind of early-ish 2011. My brother and I came from, I'd always been a nerd, but I kind of came from the economic side. Like, that's what had someone say, like, oh, you should check out Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Because my brother majored in economics, and we were living together at the time. And he would come home, and he would just be like, dude, this doesn't make any sense. And then he would just go through this stuff, and he would debate with his professors, and they would just argue. They'd be like, this is what the book says. And he's like, but this shit doesn't make any sense. Like, this can't be right. Like when you're talking about actual resources, you can't just trick money into pretending it's not moving real resources around. Like, it was, you know, about inflation and all this stuff. And so right. We would debate, like, because at the time we didn't know that there were other schools of thought, really. Like, we were looking, but he would come home and talk about, like, what he learned in class, and he was just like, this has got to be wrong. Like, how can this be right? And then we would talk about it, and we would argue, and then go in, and finally we started stumbling upon Austrian economics. We had kind of branched through the Chicago school and a couple of different monetary theories, and then finally landed on Austrian economics, and things were clicking, and we were like, oh man, there's something to this. And he was debating with he and my brother was debating with somebody on Facebook, and he was talking about, like, no, sound money is the only thing that makes any sense. And they were going back and forth and going back and forth. And he was like, man, you'd probably be interested in this crazy thing I heard about called Bitcoin. And then Jeffrey, my brother, went down, like, was like looking at this thing. He was like, what the hell is this? And I was kind of the more, like, security cypherpunk, a really, really computer nerdy guy. And so he came home so excited to tell me about it. And we immediately went down the rabbit hole that night. I read the white paper. We were up until 9 o'clock in the morning. I mean, just all the way through the night, drinking and just reading and talking about Bitcoin. It was just like, this is the coolest experiment ever. Like, this could truly test Austrian theory. Like, this is like how the only way you could do sound money. Like, it was an epiphany. Like, we were just minds blown at the time. That was pretty much it. I haven't left. Like, I'm still talking right now. Like, this is the same conversation I started back then. It's just gotten a little bit more informed. I didn't actually start. I planned on doing like a podcast or doing something like productive or useful for the Bitcoin community for like 4 years, and then just sat on it and procrastinated. And it wasn't until this year that I finally, like, was like, I got to do this or nothing, you know? Like, this is the only thing that I spend my time on outside. I'm not going to get good at any other job or occupation because I spend all of my time on Bitcoin. So if I don't just dedicate to this, I'm going to get nowhere in life because I'm still going to spend all my time on this.
I mean, it's not a bad thing to dedicate a lot of your time in life to. I mean, I've picked up. I got an account on Codecademy, and I'm learning how to code.
Yep. What are you working on?
I'm doing the web development thing. So right now I'm on JavaScript. I mean, in college I did a little bit of MATLAB, mm-hmm. So like understanding basics of I never got into object oriented stuff.
Yeah. I'm playing around with Python.
Nice.
I've gone back.
Yep, we lost him.
Yep.
We make notes like 9.
And he was talking about going back to or checking out Python.
Yeah.
So sorry, you guys there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I hit.
We lost you. Yeah, we lost
I
you.
I hit a button in my browser that's one tab, and it just closes all my tabs and brings it up in a list. I was like, oh crap.
Nice.
But yeah, I've been playing around with Python a little bit in Code Academy, and I have to admit, I don't quite have the patience for it, but I do find it interesting. I just get bored with it, so I go back and forth. But
yeah,
I feel like it's such an important skill that I just can't leave it.
I
have to keep going back to it.
Because after college, I tried to learn programming a little bit, and I just didn't have any. What you need is a project. that your own thing that you want to do. You learn kind of the basic stuff, and then you just learn by doing. So I've got two kind of website ideas. One would integrate Lightning on it. So that would be that's way down the line though. But one that I could probably do right now.
You want to do a BTC Pay server for that one?
I don't know. I gotta figure all that out. I haven't done BTC Pay server yet because I have Liberty Mugs, where we sell.
I saw Liberty Mugs. I know Liberty Mugs. I don't know. I actually have not heard your podcast before. I recognize y'all's voices, so but stumbled upon it at some point, I think. I hear about Liberty Mugs all the time. I don't know. That gets around.
Maybe that's good.
Podcasts that show about. I know all about. I've heard the Liberty Mugs thing all the
Friends
time.
Friends Against Government. When you were on that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. They did the Liberty Mugs thing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Liberty Mugs gets around.
Nice.
You got some popular mugs.
Yeah. And I want to make one. I want to implement Lightning payments on it, but I'm still trying to like just understand everything, and I've tried looking into BTC Pay server. I don't want to go on like Azure and spend $15 a month.
Yeah.
And not make money.
Well, I've been meaning to get to the point where I'm breaking out BTC Pay server and like really messing with it. Cause I've now got like, I've only got one Lightning node that's funded is Casa, but I've been spinning up software like crazy lately. Maybe I can help you out with it. I'd love to have a reason to like dig into it with like a real goal.
Yeah.
Cause I do want to break into BTC Pay server and, you know, maybe at some point make some videos or something on it.
Awesome. Yeah. I appreciate that. And we'll definitely take you up on it.
Yeah. 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 Just stay in touch. Shoot me some messages about it and we'll screw around with it and see what we can come up with.
Awesome. Yeah, so what we do in our podcast, Slappy, did you have anything else?
No.
Okay.
We're ready for the free market?
Yeah, so what we do at every, because, you know, we're a libertarian podcast, and a lot of it's us complaining about the government, like every libertarian does.
Libertarians, believe it or not.
So what we decided to do was do a little free market success story at the end of every episode, just to kind of lighten the mood and bring positive things. So. I don't know if you're aware of any of this, but J.W. Weatherman created a website called 10hoursofbitcoin.com.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Have you? I've actually got four of those works up there read by me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. So that's kind of the free, like, you know, J.W. put this website together and for people to learn about Bitcoin in what the website says, 10 hours. And it's like in little chunks, different things, step by step. And there's a couple things that Guy read. So on the bottom of the screen, there's a little donate button. And it takes you to a little Tallycoin fundraiser thing. And so we're raising money to pay you back for your work, actually.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So,
thanks. That's awesome.
Well, thank you for putting in the work.
Yeah. I think he's got that's a really cool website. He sent me a message and told me about it and asked if I could read the Bitcoin threat model and the human threat model.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not dug into those yet, so I was all jacked. I was like, "Heck yeah." And I think he's got both of those are really good. And my brother listened to the human threat model recently and he raved about that one. He was like, "Dude, that one's so good." But money, blockchains, and social scalability is, in my opinion, one of the most powerful by Nick Szabo. But shelling out the origins of money is up there, and that one's amazing too. But I love the social scalability one. That one's so awesome.
That's up there too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So yeah, that's I wasn't sure if you knew about the little Tallycoin thing. So awesome. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's sick.
We will, because one of the things we want to do is make it so that right now you can either read a lot of the stuff or listen to it, and there's some videos, but for some of these audio things, we'd like to make like cartoons with them and stuff. So
Ooh, that would be cool.
Yeah, so when the next kind of fundraising thing might be to maybe get some of them animated or something. So
find an animator. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
So it's you know, we're finding ways to get stuff done, and you know, when people do good work, they get rewarded for it. So that's kind of what we're trying to do here. So that'll be linked in the show notes page.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, no problem. So there, 10hoursofbitcoin.com. There's a tractor trailer full of information about Bitcoin there and economics. So I can't recommend it enough. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool, simple website for. It's particularly like that's spot on. When he told me about that, I was going through it. He sent it to me like a, I don't know, like a week before he released it or whatever. And I was like, oh, this is great. And it's perfect. It's simple. It's all you need. You know,
it's perfect.
There's no mess. There's no like hundreds of other links or browsers. Mm-hmm. It's just like, boom.
It's idiot proof.
10 hours. It's exactly right. It's idiot proof. It's just down the list. And then you've got 10 hours of Bitcoin. It's pretty great. I liked it.
Yeah. And it's very information dense. I know I did his Cypherpunks course.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some of the videos from that. And, I think it's like 3 hours worth of that. I'm scrolling through it. Yeah. 3 hours of, 6 of his lectures, and just about starting from basically square one.
Mm-hmm.
of transactions and bartering and money and all that, and takes you all the way up to why Bitcoin is worth it. So, that used to be behind a decently substantial paywall, but now it's, mm-hmm. now it's up there for free. So
yeah.
If nothing else, just go look at that, because that will just help you so much with understanding how speculation and investment works, and why most of the investment that we're all probably doing is pretty stupid, actually. But it's at least good to know.
Yeah. You know, there was one other thing that I had been meaning to get back to, but I had forgotten about it. That story I told you about the guy sending the in the book Exploding the Phone, about sending the phone call like all around the country, like bounce back like for thousands of miles just to call somebody in his neighborhood. And those were like the original cypherpunks, because that was kind of the overall theme of the book, was that these were the hackers. These were the first hackers that ever were. And it just started this huge cultural movement, and you could see how it just grew from just this first network that was just this mechanical dial tone network. And then this, even the same people and everything were there as it exploded onto the internet. And it was, I kind of had like goosebumps when I got the lightning torch, because I just thought, like, isn't that what we're doing with money today?
Yeah.
For what they did on the AT&T network. We're just throwing this payment around the world because we can, and nobody can stop us.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it was just beautiful to think that, like, you know, I got to hold it. I got to participate in what I think the next book is going to be about.
Yeah, 30 years from now, people will be like talking about it. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe my Twitter tag will be in that book.
Cool. I mean, I still tell people, you know, because I'll talk to some of my normie friends and they're like, I missed it on Bitcoin. And I just say, go buy $5 at a time if you have to, but just have some. You're still early.
You didn't
still
miss
early
anything.
Adopters. Yeah.
Just gotten started. Uh-huh. Oh, God, that makes me sad.
Yeah.
Don't say things like that. Just getting started. We've gone nowhere. We are at the starting line. We just crossed the paint, and it's getting exciting.
Yeah, we're only 10 years into the technology that will very likely completely revolutionize the world in a way that we can't even fathom. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we're nowhere near the end.
I fully expect to be sitting 10 years from now and looking back and going, holy crap, I had no idea what was going to happen.
Yeah,
I fully expect to just be completely blown away and have everything flipped upside down multiple times, and then just realize how little I know and how clueless I was.
Yeah, it's incredible all the stuff that's going on around us right now, and you know, at least for me, I've often thought about like what would it be like to live in the middle of some sort of revolution. And
here it is.
Yeah, we're living it now, and it's exciting. But I think we, like I said, I just don't think we can even fathom what's about to happen.
Yeah, we'll look back and realize how much it meant, mm-hmm. but it'll be really hard. It's really hard to see when you're in it, you know.
Yeah,
it's hard to tell how big the ocean is when you're wading in the water.
Exactly. So why don't you tell everyone how to find you, Guy?
Yeah, you can check me out on the Crypto Economy podcast. I do a number of different episode types. The bulk of them are quick reads. Like you notice that on the 10 Hours of Bitcoin, I've read four of the works up there. Is I just go hunting through and I read and scour hundreds of articles and Nick Szabo's work and like discussions and research papers and all kinds of crap. I even read really good Twitter threads every once in a while. I read them aloud on the show and then kind of expand on them, discuss them, or debate with them if I disagree. And then I also do my own episodes and articles, and I do interviews as well. So it's a whole slew of stuff, and that's the Crypto Economy podcast. We've hit every topic you could possibly think of around Bitcoin and the Lightning Network. And then the website is cryptoeconomy.life, where I have all of that and then some. But that's pretty much the website is the podcast in visual form.
Gotcha. And on Twitter, if you want people to.
Oh, yeah. At the Crypto Economy.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. We'll put both of them on the show notes page. McFlewell.com/131. So we'll throw up also the podcast episode that Stefan Lavera had that we were talking about with Jack Dorsey and Elizabeth Stark. And also.
Got to listen to that one.
Yeah. It's really good. And also 10 Hours of Bitcoin, and also check out Liberty Mugs, and hopefully before you know it, we'll have a BTC Pay server spun up and running there.
You know, I've got two Bitcoin mugs now. I think I'm going to have to get my taxation is theft mug.
Nice.
So
actually, if you want to do that, let me know, because we had a return so I have one just sitting at my house, so we could. I get you a deal on it.
Someone changed their mind on taxation.
Yeah. Oh man, we lost one, guys.
Yeah,
one down. We got to retweet better.
It's true.
I will take that mug off your hands. I'll send you a message tomorrow.
Awesome. All right. So,
cool, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, man, it was fun. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Absolutely, man. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Take it easy, guys.
Yep.
Peace.
We'll catch you next week.
I hope you guys enjoyed that one. Another huge thank you to McFlewell and Slappy. And do not forget to check them out on Twitter. I will link to their Twitter tags and the page for their podcast, the Rollo and Slappy Show. And and another huge thank you for my taxation is theft mug. He ended up just donating it to me. He sent me a link just yesterday, so that should be on the way soon. And I'm happy. I'll have another mug with my. I've now got my Bitcoin mug, which is like a graffiti Bitcoin symbol, which you can. Oh wait, no, that one's in my logo. You can see that one. That's my main Bitcoin mug. Then I've got the Magic Internet Money mug, which is that terrible little Dunn Paint ad with the Bitcoin wizard. And then I have, now soon I will have my taxation is theft mug. So they will keep me fueled with the coffee that runs this show. Okay, guys. And also don't forget to check out 10 Hours of Bitcoin. If you haven't already heard the couple of pieces by Nick Szabo and then listened to the Human Threat Model and the Bitcoin Threat Model yet, don't do it yet. Hit it in the order that it's listed on the 10 Hours of Bitcoin. I actually haven't gone through it. I mean, it's 10 hours of stuff and, you know, I'm pretty busy. But I'm listening to right now. I have it playing on my Apple TV in my bedroom, and I'm listening to it on my headphones. And going through the Bitcoin and Economics course, or the 3 hours of Bitcoin and Economics by J.W. Weatherman, which we talked about on the show. And that is good so far. I want to get through this whole thing, and I might actually just listen to the ones that I read again So this is going to be good. I'm excited about this. Don't forget to check that one out. That's another great place to dive into a lot of the concepts behind Bitcoin. If you're still exploring, like I am, you know, even years later. So, with that, don't forget to check out CryptoEconomy.life. Please subscribe to the show and share it with all of your friends in the Bitcoin space. Please take a moment and share it out if you could. If you're getting value out of this show and you're enjoying this and you like having this out there, that really is what keeps this running, is listeners. So if you could send it out to everybody you know in the Bitcoin space or everybody you know who wants to learn about Bitcoin, that is a huge, huge help. And thank you to everyone who has. And also leave me a review on iTunes. That's another thing that really, really helps the show and only takes, you know, a minute of your time. All right. Thank you guys so much. Check out CryptoEconomy.life. I'll have this posted up there in just a little while, along with all the other stuff we got going on. And I will see you back here on the next episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.